Good Friday morning, everyone. In today's episode, Tavis and I first check in to update each other on the happenings in our real estate lives, and then we take a quick look at the DFW market through the lens of our MLS and what it says about what's trending. Then we dive into the news of the day, including a few articles that rank Texas against the other states in terms of how expensive insurance has become and overall tax rates. We also take a look at several new restaurant developments popping up nearby and remind everyone why we are called the real estate heavyweights. Lastly, I interviewed Tavis to learn all about his commercial building adventure, and he does a great job of explaining how he landed the deal, all of his numbers involved in the project, and what might be next for that property. If you have not, please like and subscribe. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend so you can be up to date on all of our episodes, including our past episodes where we walk step-by-step through flipping a house called Real Estate Heavyweights University, and also interview some great personalities in our world of real estate, including our last one, which was amazing, with Eric Crutchfield. There you have it. So you can feel free to skip around or take it all in one handcrafted segment at a time. Well, they listed it on the MLS this week for $725. So
yeah,
blessings to the family. But I don't know that that house will move at $725.
Yeah. I'm going to have to be very, very disciplined on not, you know, doing more than I need to do. And it's still, you know, a little bit of a risk because it may or may not get what I needed to get.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
Well, good morning and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast. I am Ashton Hines. I'm a newbie. I say newbie. I've been a real estate agent for a little over 3 years. I've flipped 4 houses. I have a long-term hold. But in the whole realm of the world and the people that we run in circles with, I am new to this world, and I am here to help you out, to ask the questions, to try to pave the path to help you invest in real estate, learn a little bit more about real estate along the way. I help out a lot of investors on the realtor side of things, but also help just normal folks coming in from out of state and who want to trade a house from this school district to that school district. So I'm also involved in that world as well. The person that I met up with a few years ago that I had kind of watched for a long time on Facebook, kind of a friend I knew about in the Dallas area. I just knew he was killing it as far as the business he was doing, is Tavis Westbrook. And he has helped me out. He's flipped over 200 houses. He's got a commercial building. He's got midterm, short term. He's touched on a little bit of everything. He's done new builds. And he's very versed in the real estate world here in DFW, and I'm super lucky to have him as a co-host, but more importantly, as a friend and a mentor in the real estate business. And he happens to be sitting here today so he can talk to you and teach you as well. What's going on, Tavis?
Good morning, and welcome to episode
43.
Hey.
Getting better at
Spanish. You're rolling your R's this morning. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. We got an interview coming up. Yeah. I'm going to work on that intro for Walter. You know, we hinted at a little bit more of a boxing intro. I got Walter. We have Walter Barraza that's coming up. I have to be a Barraza. I got to get aggressive with my rolling R's, but yeah, we got the interview coming up this coming up Tuesday. It was super cool. He comes from the world of design. He's spent a lot of time here in Dallas. He's worked on some huge accounts that I'm sure you know about and have heard about, and his life knowledge and insight into that world. But also he's you know, in the newbie realm of real estate too. So super cool interview. Please check it out. But we come here every Friday. We try to touch a little bit on market updates and news and just making sure everything's going cool in the world of Tavis and Ashton. The thing I have not talked about here is I think we actually had a sort of this long, heartfelt conversation about sons and, you know, not going to college and finding their way in the professional world. And about 2 weeks ago, you know, about a month and a half before graduating high school, my son decided that he wanted to apply for Texas Tech. And he applied and he got in. Yeah, a couple of days ago, he got his email that said, you've been accepted, and he already has a roommate picked out and all these things. So we went from thinking, hey, he's going to be gone for the summer, but he's coming home, to now 6 more weeks at the house. He's going to be traveling all summer doing marching band all over the country, and then he's going to Tech. And so it's shifting gears in the Hines house emotionally. I've had to hold it together a few times, because, you know, trying to come to grips with all that, and, you know, just trying, now it's all these logistic things of like, okay, have you filled this out? Have you done this? So yeah, it's definitely a busy time in our life. As far as Zach is concerned, I've been running around a lot. I've been showing a lot of houses. I've been showing a lot of condos. I've been introduced to the world of condo, and I'm not a huge fan. Let me just say that. I'm not a huge fan of the condo. It turns out a lot of condo associations are underfunded, and so then they don't qualify for traditional loans, which means higher interest rates or higher down payments. And there's just a lot of questions of who takes care of this and that. That being said, if you want to get into the Dallas market and you want to try to get in under 200, 250,000, you're trying to do a midterm rental for nurses, like a couple of my people are, this is the pool you're swimming in. So just trying to filter through some of these condos to try to find a good one, a good association taken care of, is proving to be more difficult than you might think. So I don't know if you've ever messed with the condo thing, and we may have talked about this, but
you know, what's disappointing with when you hear a condo, right? We I think our brain wants to go to the fancy, you know, condos on the beach, or the condos in downtown, or, you know, something with Manhattan, a view. And, yeah, you know, you hear that word, and unfortunately condo, a lot of cases, especially in lower price points, are like apartments that were turned into, yes, condos, right?
Yeah. Someone bought an apartment and they divided it all out, and they did the paperwork to sell them individually. And, yeah, and unfortunately, in the parts of town a lot of these are in, it was in the 60s. So a lot of the air situation is weird. You're climbing stairs. A lot of them have either, they don't have laundry in the unit, or they've somehow in a real squirrely fashion figured out how to squeeze a, you know, this really weird looking laundry dryer combo thing in an old closet. It's kind of bizarre. You know, if you had a purpose built condo in a decent part of town, great. I think it would be really cool. You know, I think it'd be perfect. But a lot of the lower price ones that are close to hospitals and that sort of thing happen to be these, you know, early 60s apartments that are retrofitted, and it's just kind of difficult to weed through the trash. I've probably looked at 7 or 8 condo buildings that fit the profile of what we're looking for, and one of them so far has qualified as funded properly from the condo side, that it would actually qualify for an FHA loan, traditional loan. But this one, it doesn't have laundry, you know, so it's fine. It's on site, but it's, even then it's just, okay, it's cool. It's a cool thing. It might work out, but it's like, okay, you know, it doesn't have laundry. So then you're trying to work around that. So anyway, I know the people that are looking, they're really excited. They want it. I want it for them. We actually looked at one that's functioning as a midterm already, or for nursing. So it can happen, but it's just a little bit of a needle in a haystack type thing right now. So anyway, that's what I've been spending a lot of time on. So you haven't picked up any new flips or anything like that in the last week or so, have you?
I'm waiting on a contract to come back on the one that I sent out yesterday. So
okay,
if the seller inks it, which, you know, we've got an agreement that it's been verbally discussed, and I sent the contract to follow up on that. So I'm waiting on them to sign off. So it's going to be a quick little... You know, I was messing with the budget yesterday, and I had to kind of scrub it back because I was a little bit healthy on the budget, just to kind of say, what if, what if, what if? And I started putting the budget together, and then I did the math once I ran that budget up, and I was like, yeah, that's not going to work. So yeah. I'm going to have to be very, very disciplined on not, you know, doing more than I need to do. And it's still, you know, a little bit of a risk because it may or may not get what I needed to get. So it's skinny, but based on the information, I mean, it's a two bedroom, two bath, a little zero lot line over, it's technically Dallas, but it's Carrollton Farmers Branch ISD. So a good little pocket over there. I feel pretty good about it. I actually helped a client buy it a few years ago. She's now kind of moving on. She's moving to Mexico full time. And so it's convenience for her.
Yeah.
And so I'm basically paying her the same money she would make if we sold it on MLS without all the fees, creating a win-win. But it's skinny. It's going to be a lipstick. And just kind of get in, get out kind of thing and clean it up and polish it up. One of the things is the electrical panel needed to be updated when she bought it and moved to the outside. It's in the master closet. And so that's something I'm going to take on the expense to do. But my electricians are not cheap. So I'm like, will it just stop there that I can just move the panel, or am I going to end up spending another $1,000-$1,500 on other stuff? You know, so that's part of where I started putting pen to paper. And I'm like, oh gosh. All right.
Yeah.
This one's going to be, it's going to be a challenge. So it's going to be interesting if it all works out the way I want it to.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it works out. It's real close by. It'd be cool to watch that one. So, well, good deal. Well, why don't we get a little bit of a market update? In the Dallas area on our MLS, the interesting thing that it seems to be happening is the number of homes for sale is creeping up, and the inventory is creeping up. And if you look at year over year, we're about 15% higher on inventory than we were a year ago. That contrasts to the pending sales and the closed sales for the same period of time are down 5.4% and 6.7%. respectively. So we have more and more coming on to the market, but we have less transactions that are pending and closing and all that. That probably is why the inventory is creeping up. You have this steady thing that happens in just a normal market, but now it's slowing down where people are not buying. So I'm not exactly, you know, of course, the interest rate right now, the 30-year interest rate, I looked it up just a second ago, 7.54. 30-year fixed, according to the mortgage calculator on Google. So we'll see, you know, super official there. But, 7.5, 7.6, kind of depending on credit. And it's still super expensive to get money. And so you have people, I think, that are trying to move on and maybe move out of town. And like we said, death and divorce and all that's still happening. So you have things going on to the market, but there's just not a lot of people out there that are actually pulling the trigger on things. I will say I got a text yesterday from the representative at D.R. Horton. We bought a house with a new couple a couple weeks ago in D.R. Horton, and they still have some amazing rates. They're offering FHA at 4.9 and traditional at 5.9. They have all sorts of closing costs and throwing in blinds, and it's really hard to compete with that. If you are selling an existing home in an area where they're building, and you have D.R. Horton and all these entry-level builders, LGI, all sorts of builders out there, they're similar programs, it's going to be tough. And I do not envy people who are really needing to sell right now. So you have all the voluntary people sitting on the sideline just waiting for all this news that they've heard for the last 12 months that says, yep, Fed's going to drop the rates, Feds are going to drop the rates. Well, we're just kind of waiting. Everyone thinks towards the election, we'll get a little bit of movement there because they want the economy to look good and things to be looking great. So at some point, we think it will. It'll be interesting, though, because there's this pent-up demand, this pent-up desire to trade houses. And so whenever the rates do drop a little bit, I think there will be a rush out into the market. Oddly, I think it'll also increase pricing. And so your net payment, the net cost of a house might actually be about the same with the interest rates if they drop a little bit, but pricing goes up. But maybe you feel better about it because you're locking in a lower rate mentally. Mentally, it'll feel better there.
Yeah, so. I think everyone's got the itch, right? Like, I mean, the normal time frame people own home, hold on to homes is about 5 years, you know, and I think in that case, you know, people were kind of getting that itch, right? And they have equity now, right? So not only are they getting the itch for a change, but they have a good amount of equity sitting there and people are looking to exercise it. And it's like money burning a hole in your pocket, right? You're like, what do I do with this money now? You know, oh, I want something else. I want to change it up. You know, I think that's something that's going to definitely keep things moving along. If the rates do drop a little bit, it's going to create that frenzy again of people trying to change it up. So,
yeah, definitely. I think there is that huge pent up demand, and we will see a huge jump into the market by people whenever it drops at all. I think it'll really absorb some of that inventory. So, you know, if you can pick up a flip right now and it's a two or three month timeline, it may time out great for you. That could be wonderful. Speaking of, I sent this to you. We walked a flip about a month ago. Do you remember what we quoted on that house over there in Canyon Creek where we tried to buy it as a flip and we did the comps and it was on that corner lot and there was a big old power line in the back? And we
yep.
I know you think that this house is worth a little bit more, but I think it's going to be hard to sell. It's on a really busy street, blah, blah, blah. Do you remember what we said we thought it was going to need to be purchased at to be able to flip it? Because it needs to be flipped. It is not updated at all. It needs a ton of work. Do you remember what our number was? Was it in the fours or five or something?
It was, I think I put a three on it. I think it needed to be in the threes, like okay. The high threes, I believe.
Well, they listed it on the MLS this week for $725. So
yeah.
Blessings to the family. But I don't know that that house will move at $725. I may be completely shocked, but I think the ARV we had on it was maybe mid eights after it was completely renovated and brought up to speed for that neighborhood. So there's people out there that are still trying. I don't think that was a death. It might have been a death situation.
Yeah, it was an estate. Like their parents had died or something. The parents had died, and so the kids had it. And I mean, there was still one of the kids living there. And we saw it too. Like they did some kind of reverse mortgage or something and borrowed $600,000+ on it like a year or 2 years before.
And maybe that's the driving factor there.
I don't know, man. You know, and we talked to them. They feel like they've got something that they don't, you know, and they cleaned it out at least. When we walked it, it was still full of stuff, but that thing needs so much work. I mean, that was part of it is we were walking it and it's like, oh gosh, you know, and the floors were squishy, pure beam. And there was a lot of areas where you had problems there. There was problems with the electrical. The layout was okay. But I mean, like they were advertising this big lot. And one of the things that they obviously didn't understand or weren't willing to understand is that there's setbacks on that lot because it was a corner of a cul-de-sac. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you have a big lot, but it wasn't usable. And the way the house was designed, the side of the yard that was massive was facing the garage and there was no access point from that to the house. So it wasn't like you could enjoy it. And the backyard was actually pretty small. I mean, it was pretty much all pool. And there was a lot of things wrong with it. And so they're going to be sitting for a while.
So yeah, I think they might be sitting for a while. We might be surprised. We may go by there. And
not to mention that it's also in a really busy road. So
very busy road. Yes. But I'm sure they saw the two blocks away, the house that just sold in 3 days, it was $1.375 million. That they're like, wow, we could be that. Well, that was your modern house that completely different story, completely redone mid-century that actually was undervalued. But when people see that on a map and they see the sign out front and they see cars pulling up constantly and they think, oh, wow, let's do that. It will not go that way, I don't think. But, well, why don't we get to a little bit of news?
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From Dallas, Texas, the Flash, apparently official.
There's good news and bad news.
This is a massive story. Who wouldn't publish it?
We landed on the moon!
Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
So in the news this week, a few articles came out and just some quick little statistics. Texas was ranked the fifth highest state in the country for insurance. Some of the competitors that were a little bit more expensive were Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, your hurricane states. For some reason, California was not in the top five there, but they are always mentioned at the top of property insurance as well. But Texas is creeping up there. And one of the reasons might be that yesterday we had a tennis ball size hail report. And about 2 weeks ago, our friend Ryan up in Little Elm had a picture of a golf ball size hail that had hit his house. And we have a significant number of hailstorms that have been coming through over the last several years. And it seems like at least three or four times a year, you're watching the radar and it will drop like nuts, you know, and in a half mile away, nothing, or a pea-sized hail or something like that. So I think insurance rates are really becoming an issue, because if you, you know, inflation's a problem, and then you have house insurance, which is, you know, that just increases every year on your mortgage. And then we have property taxes, which are some of the highest, you know, around. So the property taxes and insurance, they keep on coming and they keep on adding to your mortgage. And at some point you get priced out, and it becomes a real affordability issue, which we've talked about affordability before. And, you know, it's out of hand. So something has to break at some point. Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Not to mention every Paul, Dick, and Harry that jumped into the roofing industry because they see everybody driving around with their flashy clothes and lifted trucks. And, you know,
lifted trucks are important. That's an important part of it.
Yeah, but everyone's like, hey, what do you do? Oh, I'm a roofer, you know. Yeah. And they may or may not have any experience in construction beforehand, but basically all they are is a glorified GC that specializes in roofing, which means you have crews that do the work for you, and hopefully they're reliable enough to actually do a good job. And, you know, and you go out and knock on doors and chase the weather trail that shows you where this hail dropped, and yep, turn the claims in. And so because that's been happening so often, and the way the insurance policies have been written, you know, the roofing companies are taking advantage. You know, everyone's getting their roof. So I think it's going to end up changing to where roofs are not going to be covered under a hailstorm. I think that they're going to probably pull that policy away and change it, because they're just getting eaten alive with this technique. And it's definitely going to change the market. I think we're going to see a lot of roofers get out of the business when that happens, because they're not going to have the business anymore.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know,
between the roofers, and I read another article, we've talked about the solar industry. There was an opinion piece in the Dallas Morning News about the solar industry, and it was basically saying a lot of what we said. It's just a very, very unregulated kind of wild west with the contracts, and it's a lot about sales, and it's convoluted on, you know, who's responsible. Is it who installed it? Is it the actual people who have the equipment? Is it the service provider? There's all sorts of moving parts. And yeah, so the roofing industry is not technically complicated, but it definitely, I think, is running up some of the insurance costs in Texas. And now that we're fifth highest in the country, and we have some hurricanes, we had some tornadoes, but we don't deal with earthquakes. You know, I guess the Panhandle had the fires. So we have some of the natural disasters that other people have, but I think a lot of ours has to deal with hail, storm damage, that sort of thing. It might have been too, stemming from the infrastructure of the frozen, you know, the winter storm that we had a few years ago, where all sorts of people had to make claims on the winter side. So if we do have a bad winter storm, it's cataclysmic, because most people are not prepared for that. So maybe it's that too, is where we're kind of getting hit during the winter. If it's bad, it's really bad. And then if a storm comes through, it's typically, it could have the potential of being damaging. So I'm not really sure on that one. So as far as tax burden goes, I told you that we're 37th overall. Alaska is the lowest tax burden. So if you want to just get away from the taxes and people in general, just move to Alaska. One thing that I did want to bring up, I was paying attention to some restaurants, the real estate heavyweights. We are experts in the restaurant world in the Dallas area. There was a restaurant downtown called Iron Cactus. It closed during COVID. I specifically remember being in that restaurant and thinking, this had got to be really expensive to design the inside of this restaurant. I remember there being some huge horse, maybe this metal sculpture of a horse or something, and some crazy chandeliers. And we were having a birthday dinner there with some friends. I remember it being, man, this is, well, anyway, it closed during COVID. Well, it's reopening, and there's a company coming in called Hampton Social. The reason why this article popped out is because Tavis and I the other day were talking about the idea of a Seafood Tower, which I had no idea what that was. But specifically in this article, they say Hampton Social will have a seafood tower, and you can enjoy that seafood tower in a $1.2 million build-out. So they're ripping out everything in Iron Cactus and spending $1.2 million, which probably, I don't know, maybe that didn't even go that far these days. Sounds expensive to me. But a build-out for a seafood restaurant that's based in Miami and New York, I believe, coming to Dallas. So maybe you can go teach me what a seafood tower is at the new Hampton Social, Tavis.
Yeah, for sure. Seafood tower is delicious, but they are expensive and they are very proud of them. So depending on where you go.
I'll take you to Chewy's first and then you can treat me to the seafood tower. Yeah.
Sometimes they charge you per person. So if you can find a place that doesn't do it per person, Eddie V's was very impressed with that, and they did not charge per person. They would just say, do you want the large or the medium?
Large.
Kind of depends on what your table. But other places, they'll charge you, per person. And Del Frisco's, for instance, and it gets very, very expensive. So,
yes,
it's a treat. It's definitely not something you're going to do all the time.
Speaking of treats, if you're into the alcoholic beverage type of treat, you're in luck. Frisco is developing a new brewery right next to the Toyota Stadium up there where the FC Dallas team plays there, the professional soccer team, where the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame is randomly, is on Main Street there at the stadium. Right next to that, there's a farmer's market, sort of covered barn, outdoor shopping area. It's been a little vacant for a while. We played volleyball right next to there and would drive by it all the time. Well, it's being filled by a new brewery and the renderings look really cool. I think they're going to incorporate a lot of that outdoor space, maybe some of that farmer's market. I'm not really sure, but it looks really, really cool. So that the Main Street and downtown area of Frisco is really building out to be something cool. It's really neat during Christmas. They make a huge effort in their downtown kind of timed lighting with music and all that sort of thing. So if you've never spent time in that part of Frisco, definitely worth it. And now you have something else to go check out. And if alcoholic beverages are not your thing, then maybe you will enjoy McDonald's latest foray into expansion is a concept restaurant called Cosmics, COSMC'S. It looks like a combo of Sonic and Starbucks, and it's a beverage-centered, I guess you could go in, maybe it's just drive-thru, but sort of a beverage-centered drive-thru thing. But the cool thing is Dallas, specifically Preston and Campbell, has the second location in the country, and they're opening multiple more in our market. But right now, you can go to Preston and Campbell and try out the new McDonald's example of their restaurant Cosmics, and it looks really cool. A lot of really bright colored drinks and some coffee. They got a lot of cake pops and desserts. So I don't know, I probably shouldn't figure out where that is and go by very often, but let me tell you what, their marketing department did great because their website looked delicious and I want to go check it out.
Are they building it to compete with like Starbucks and other coffee shops? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, I kind of think so. I mean, they have a pretty extensive, not extensive, but they have a coffee offering at McDonald's. And I'm assuming that this is just sort of an expansion of that. But like I said, it's kind of like Sonic because they have this huge kind of non-coffee drink offering and some ice cream. So it really is like they took the best of both worlds where they're doing slushes and ice creams and cake pops and cookies. But they also have a whole coffee realm that you can dive into there. So I may have to go check that out because it looks cool. They're going for a kind of a vintage 50s space vibe, which
Cosmics.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Are you a McDonald's fan? I'm not. I steer clear typically. The only thing I like at McDonald's every once in a blue moon is the breakfast sandwiches. But
yeah.
You know, they have a time limit and when they don't serve it. So it's very rare that I actually meet that timeline and can get a biscuit
or an
egg McMuffin, not an egg McMuffin, but what's the egg and cheese biscuit, you know, is pretty good. But yeah, that's the only thing. Like, I don't do McDonald's otherwise. So
yeah, well, unfortunately, I do love McDonald's, and I have gained plenty of weight at McDonald's, and I've had to give it up. And I do love their breakfast. That's actually the only meal I would ever eat at McDonald's. But
well, there you go.
Yes, I am a sucker for the McDonald's egg McMuffin or the breakfast burrito, which is horrible because there's so many other great breakfast taco places around here that you should never buy a McDonald's breakfast burrito. But here we are, and this is why I need to go run after this podcast a little bit. So, all right, that is the news. And so today for our real estate topic, what we wanted to do is to dive a little bit into the world of commercial real estate. And every time I intro Tavis, I mention the fact that he has a small commercial building or a commercial building. So I wanted Tavis to kind of walk us through. In my opinion, this is a cool progression in your journey. I'm sure some people start out with commercial and it's no big deal. But I think, you know, folks in our world where you're doing a flip and you've got a rental and now you've got a few of those and maybe a little multifamily and maybe a duplex. At some point, you kind of think, okay, what's next? Maybe you're doing some 1031 exchanges. You're having to move up stream a little bit. And so the idea of a small commercial building is really cool. And I think the way you did it, where you had the value add, you were able to pick it up and do some stuff to it. And now you're on the other side of it and you have some options. I wanted to just kind of talk through how you came to even picking the one you have, what you had to do to it, the process of maybe filling it up, and now sort of the doors that it's open to you either in the short term and the long term. So how did you come to the conclusion that it was time to do a small commercial building at that point in your career?
So I first was introduced to this building in about second quarter of 2018. And how it happened was I helped a family. My mother-in-law worked for this family, and the gentleman was older, and he needed in-house care, 24/7 in-house care, and she was whatever you call it, you know, certified nurse or whatever, you know, for in-house care, and kind of was in the home with him for so many days, 24 hours a day, taking care of him and that kind of thing. So anyways, they lived in a big house in North Garland, needed to sell that home. I helped them facilitate the sale of that. And then found a smaller home that was much more manageable over in Saxe. And so they transitioned, downsized. Well, in the process of doing that, the daughter had mentioned, hey, by the way, we have a commercial property that he owns as well. And they've owned it since the 90s. And, you know, we're getting a lot of notices from the city, you know, that the property needs work and what have you. And we need to sell that too. And I said, okay, great. So I kind of went and looked at it and I drove the property and I was just thinking in my mind, I was like, okay, how do I put on my real estate hat to sell it? But furthermore, what if I could buy it? And it definitely needed work. You know, I didn't really know too much of what I was getting into other than that I understood the concept of how commercial real estate works, much like a multifamily or anything that you have to basically buy a building, renovate it, and then establish, you know, tenants. And once you establish tenants and you get leases signed and initiated, then, you know, that's going to create value. It creates value by the net operating income, which will catapult the value of a property when you can increase, you know, what you're receiving in gross rents and net rents. So anyways, that was kind of the beginning take of it. And I would inquire about it, talked about it, but basically what it came down to is the gentleman that owned it, you know, they sold their house, they ended up taking cash, buying the new house in Saxe, and he had Social Security income and what other kind of other retirement account income he had, but he was getting, you know, this building was paid for, and even though it needed work, they didn't have money for any deferred maintenance or keeping up with it. But it was basically paying his, you know, it was creating income for him. It was cash flow. And again, this gentleman wasn't able to do a lot for himself, but this was income he was receiving every month. And I believe he was getting somewhere in the ballpark around, I think the gross numbers were somewhere around like $42,000 a year, you know, something like that. So I think at the end of the day, minus expenses, he might have been, you know, taking home, you know, $2,500 to $3,000 a month or somewhere in that range, right? At the end of the day, they needed it. So they actually never decided to sell it because he needed that income. And so, and I think they looked at, you know, if he sold it, there would be tax, you know, tax penalties or tax cost for selling it. So they ended up just keeping it. And unfortunately, he ended up passing away in, I believe, 2021, I believe. Yeah, because I bought the building in 22. So when he passed away, September 21, I believe, then, of course, then the son that inherited the property, started having these conversations about selling the property. And so anyways, we went into contract in December of 21 and were able to, and in fact, that I wrote an offer on it before and kind of wrote a low offer, didn't hear back, didn't hear anything. And it was around Thanksgiving time. One of the family members was actually here with my mother-in-law. And I was like, hey, what's up with the commercial building? And they were like, oh, well, your offer was too low, but he's wanting to sell it, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we need this number. And I was like, oh, okay, well, let me crunch it. Let me dive in deep. And so we were able to actually go into contract. And the son actually had an idea that it was going to close pretty quick, but I knew that it was going to be, you know, it needed to be probated and all these different things. So it ended up taking quite some time. We didn't end up closing it until May of 2022. By that time, it had lost one of the tenants. One of the tenants' leases had expired and they didn't renew it, you know, which was okay to me because my plan was I needed to buy the property, get in there and do a lot of renovations that need to be done to the exterior of the building, parking lot, you know, exterior paint. I knew the plumbing system was bad. I knew the foundation was in bad shape. So there was a lot of things that I had already known about. And my idea was that I was going to try to keep any tenant that wanted to stay, renovate the building, and then renegotiate rents with them. And everybody was month to month as well. So basically kind of started that process and going through it. And I knew enough to be dangerous and knew enough to, you know, buy into it. And fortunately, my bank was supportive in the project and the projections. And I was very conservative on the projections. I was pretty conservative on the renovations. I mean, we had projected it was going to cost about $150,000 in renovations. As of today, I've spent about $260,000 in renovations. Imagine that. But one of the things I didn't anticipate or knew much about was what's called tenant improvement, or TI. And that's your individual renovations to the inside units, if you will. And one of them was vacant. So that was, that created the opportunity for me to go in and kind of create the model. And so I spent a lot of money. We raised the ceilings all the way up. We foam encapsulated the roof line. And the ceilings had a drop ceiling in at 9 foot, but we were able to raise them up to 14 feet and did some cool LED pendant lights and, you know, painted the ceiling black and really modernized it, polished the floors. But it created kind of a model. And that ended up getting the vape shop in there. So we were able to get them. They were kind of our first big lease, signed a 5-year lease, got them locked and loaded. And then everybody else kind of followed.
Pause just real quick. Real quick. Did you have a broker? You weren't representing yourself, right? Were you going through a commercial broker that kind of helped you do the due diligence and that sort of thing? Or were you doing all this on your own?
When I bought it, I basically, it was just an agreement between, you know, my company and the seller. And I represented myself. And then as far as, you know, reaching out, a friend of mine named Barry Seal, who's KW Commercial out of DPR, has been kind of an advocate for me from the beginning. So I called him in the beginning to run comps because, again, it's kind of the Wild Wild West and commercial.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask too about that, the comps. How did you know what this building was even really worth, what the potential was? I mean, you could probably do research on rents. How do you determine cap rate? Because that's really one of the big variables. You can nail down rents, say, hey, it's here. We think we could be it here. But how do you even know what multiple you should be offering off of net operating income? Because commercial valuations are done completely different than residential typically. So you're going off of your net operating income times a multiple. That should give you your valuable or your value. And what can change, the variable that can change, is you can raise rents or lower rents, and that cap rate can go up or down. Typically, a higher cap rate's more of a risky proposal. The more stable an area gets, the more stable a building is, the more of a safe investment it is, that cap rate goes down, cap rate compression, and that actually raises the value of the property. So did he help you say, hey, I think it's worth about this? This is the cap rate-ish in that area. How did you go about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So he helped kind of find some comps of recent sales, and we were able to kind of compare and contrast those a little bit based on what they sold for cap rate. You know, like, okay, this building was a small strip center. It's in Garland. You know, this was the, you know, the design and the year built, and this is kind of what, you know, what it recently sold for. Here was the cap rate for that building. Here, you know, here was another one. And then we were able to look at market rents, right, which determine what the market rent is going to go for, you know, per foot for the actual space, you know, for the lease space. So between those two numbers is kind of what you have to figure out. You know, the dollar per foot is going to determine what your gross income is going to be per unit and what you can increase the rents to. And then one of the things, though, that was attractive with that building is they were getting, the average rent that they were getting before was about $750 a unit per month. No triple net. So what triple net is, for people out there that don't understand, is triple net are basically the expenses to operate the building. So taxes is part of that triple net. Insurance, or the cost of the building, is part of the triple net. And then any expenses the landlord incurs to operate the building. So mowing, maintenance, right, during the growing season. And then I have the water, city water and sewer and trash is part of triple net. And then I took it a step further, and I have cameras now and internet that feed those cameras. So that's all part of that cost as well. And so, and then alarm monitoring as well. I include that because for my insurance to get the better premium, I needed to have alarm systems on every unit. And so the only way to do that was actually to control that piece of it. And then basically, because it's a 5-unit building, 20% of my total cost is allocated back to the monthly rent to each tenant, right? And that's where the triple net comes in. So the benefit of that compared to like midterms and short terms or in 12-month, you know, residential rents is that when taxes and insurance go up, I can actually give that back to the client. That's going to increase their cost, but it may only increase their cost by $5 or $6 a month, right? When you look at, you know, 5 tenants, you know, paying a portion of it. And so it doesn't affect their rents too much, but it helps me tremendously because if those numbers go up, you know, the end result is that the tenant's going to be reimbursing me, you know, for that expense. So that's what's amazing about commercial on triple net, being able to get that. And I think that's an attraction out there in the market for sure, of other people wanting to get into a property that's established as creating triple net. But yeah, so I had help. Barry helped me to research this information and dive into it. And just to give you guys a little bit of the background, again, I mentioned, you know, average rents were about $700 to $750 a month. And I was able to, you know, look at increasing those rents. And I believe we were pretty conservative, just trying to say, hey, what if we can get $1,000 a month? You know, and that was based off of looking at comps and looking at everything else going on. And we were able to, you know, get the rents up with triple net included now. I believe my average rents are around, let's see, they're around $1,600 a month per unit now. So our gross income now, it went from like 42,000. And again, that number dropped down to the low 30s because I lost it, or I didn't have a tenant. I only had four tenants out of five when I bought the building. And it took some time. It took us 2 years to get it fully established, right? Because by the time we did the renovations and then tenants like finishing their lease or wouldn't renew or what have you, and then we were vacant for a while to try to, you know, market and get a new tenant in there. And so as of today, we're fully, you know, we're fully occupied, and our gross rents are just under $100,000 a year. So it's like $99,000 and change. And our net income after you back out the triple net is somewhere in the $74,000 range now. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing, right? Yeah. When you look at the power of that in a short amount of time, in 2 years, to be able to increase the rent by that much and stabilize it to a point. And then you look at now, there's different parts of it that make the property attractive because it's early in a 5-year lease term with the new leases that are on there. So other investors that are looking to park money somewhere and get a cap rate. You mentioned the cap rate. And so the market cap rate for a building like mine is somewhere between 6% and 7%, you know, so somewhere in that range. And how that is calculated is basically, it is the net operating income, which in this case is about 74,000. And then you divide that into the purchase price. It's going to give you that percentage, or you take the 74,000 and divide it by, you know, the average cap rate. Right. So if you take 74,000 divided by like 6%, it's going to be somewhere around like 1.2, you know, somewhere in that range. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you created this value. You were able to, so you kind of had this value add. You flipped it basically where you went in, you saw what was possible. You renovated it. You had to put that money up front to go mm-hmm. ahead and do that. You knew what you were doing. You had an idea about what it.
I learned as I went. On the yeah, backside. For sure. There was yeah. definitely several things. I mean, it's kind of like you talk about with your flips, right? Like,
yeah.
Sometimes by taking that action and doing it, you learn a lot. And I definitely learned a lot, you know, going through.
But I think some of it's probably tenant mix. We didn't talk about that a whole lot, which maybe yeah. we could. I have a buddy that's a real estate attorney, does leases, talks a lot about tenant mix, and a lot of times in bigger shopping centers, it's specifically written. Hey, we're only going to market to one restaurant. We're only going to market to one haircut place or whatever. But trying to find this mix of, okay, I'm sure early on you have someone approach you and say, hey, I'm willing to pay you rent. You're like, you know, I don't know if this is the right shop for us right here. I'm sure it's tempting to go ahead. Yeah, just let's fill it up. But it seems like you have a nice eclectic mix. You have that small restaurant, La Marquesita, sort of a bakery, Latin bakery. You have the boxing, you have a long-term stable State Farm, which is kind of just an established name, which I'm sure is really good.
Oh, that was
the,
good.
You know, yeah. Yeah. Really good for the center where you have this brand name there, and you have the vape shop. So yeah. And you have a barbershop too.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's a really cool mix. And you know, I know part of that's times of day. When is the parking lot going to be full? What's the crowd like? Who is going to come to this thing or to that thing? And you know, then you have zone. I'm sure you have certain zoning laws. Well, you can't have this type of shop here, and so you have to get into all that. It really worked out for you where you had some really good tenants that seem to be pretty solid, that aren't sort of fly by night, hey, you're going to be gone, and or the tenants that are coming by are super crazy or anything.
Yeah,
like
that. and the permitting for the tenants, right, to get a CO, that certain established businesses create different parking demands too. Mm. So that's something that you have to be aware of too, is, you know, how many parking spaces do you have to work with, and what kind of tenants are you going to be in there that, you know, to require a certain amount of parking. And so like the restaurant's one of the biggest demands, right? They needed the most parking spaces compared to some of the other ones. So that's something that I had no knowledge of before, you know. Unfortunately, a good friend of mine, Keith Francis, does a commercial finish out. And so certain things I run into, like he gave me a name and number of a guy named Gustavo that does drop ceilings. You know, prior to that, I never had any experience with that. I never needed a trade to do drop ceilings, but that's something I found myself, like the restaurant, we had to completely redo the entire drop ceiling in that place. So there was definitely things like that that I had to learn and get a hold of, and commercial vent hoods, and, you know, just different things like that that you don't really deal with. Yeah. But fortunately, a lot of my other trades, my plumbers, my electricians, you know, my painters, you know, those guys all do commercial as well, and my HVAC guys. So it was very helpful that I already had a relationship with a lot of my trades to do a lot of that work.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure it's one of those things you just, you kind of pick up a little bit of knowledge here and there. Hey, I don't really ever want to mess with a fast food restaurant with the grease trap. I don't want to ever mess with the liquor store or a nail salon. I know there's a horror story of, you know, like nail salons can smell very strong. Well, if you're next door and the insulation isn't great or whatever, now you're next door, you're upstairs or something like that, you're smelling this nail salon all day, every day in your business. Or yeah. I know there was a gym, maybe it was you telling me, but there was a gym with super loud music, you know, that was just part of their thing. But then the next door tenant's like, it's not really my vibe. So I think having to really work through all that, and then you have parking lot issues and, hey, only parking for these three, to go parking only. It's like, it gets fairly complicated. So I'm sure once you get, you know, used to it, and then that's also why you hire professionals and you get a broker and you get a real estate attorney to look over this lease, because that's when those leases become super important. Who's in charge of this? When, what, who are you bringing in? Who am I competing with? What are my rights to, you know, the sound and all this sort of thing? So it gets really,
yeah, the big, but the big thing for me, you know, in the beginning with the opportunity was knowing it had potential. Well, one of the biggest things for me is that what I was able to buy the building for, I couldn't touch it. Like, I mean, to buy dirt, you know, the dirt that the building was on was worth as much as I paid for the building and the dirt. And I made a phone call to Keith at the time, and I was like, hey, what's it cost to build a tilt wall commercial building, 6,000 square feet? And he was like, those numbers start at like 200 a foot. And I think I was buying the building and the dirt all in for maybe, I don't know, it was less than $60 a foot or something crazy. Mm. So that was like a big driving factor to me. It was like, hey, I got to take this thing down. You know, I got to run through it and renovate this thing, and I can make this work. But one of the other things is like traffic count is one of those big things. We don't get a lot of traffic directly on the frontage of our building. And so that's kind of hurt the vape shop, you know? And so that's something that we're kind of learning as we go, like, okay, I can see where, you know, that restricts it a little bit. That's going to keep some of my value down. That's going to keep some of the rents lower, you know, because I'm not getting this tremendous amount of traffic. But it's in a part of Garland that, you know, there is, it's right next to Rowlett, and there's a bunch of new development going on around us, you know, residential stuff. And it's a little bit of a slower transition. And this building's been there since 1985. And I think it's taken the neighborhoods and the people a little bit of time to see that, hey, this is transition. This is not the same building that it used to be. And all the tenants have changed over. And the biggest thing that bothered me in the beginning was that the parking lot was dead all the time. Like I would drive up and it would be like no cars in the parking lot. And this would be during business hours, during the week. You know, we had a little bit of problem with homeless people hanging out, and, you know, we had some vandalism and things like that in the very beginning, because it just looked like this rundown building. You know, like people are like, well, they don't care, I don't care. Of course, that was, you know, part of my plan to change all of that. And I feel like now it's exciting. I drive by and there's a good amount of cars in the parking lot now. It feels like things are going on. They've got new signage. I never knew how much I'd get excited about new signage, you know, that people put up, you know, but it looks really good. Like, and I learned a lot about that. I mean, like the channel letters, you know, are super expensive, but man, they look good. You know, it's just one of those things. Fortunately, the tenant pays for those. You know, I didn't really understand how all that worked in the beginning, but I have a lot better idea now.
In place that say, this is our expectation. You can't just glue up a tarp that has your name on there. We have some, you know, we want a certain vision on.
Absolutely. And the city does too, you know, the city definitely has restrictions on what they want to see out there for advertising. But anyways, thanks for bringing it up, man. This is
I think that's a good topic. I mean, we've mentioned it a bunch of times that you have this small commercial, and you know, definitely want to dive into that. We'd love to, I hope soon to get a couple commercial people on here that have sort of been in that world, and that's kind of their thing. It'd be fun to dive into that and learn a little bit, because that is talk about a newbie. I mean, that's just a completely different language, different agreements, different how you deal with the brokers and all the agents. And actually it might be similar to what the residential works towards, how they actually buy and sell properties. So it would be nice to talk to a really good commercial broker at some point. But anyway, for another day. So if you have not already, like, subscribe, please follow us on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. And all the things. I'm Ashton Hines, the Dallas Real Estate Guy. This is Tavis Westbrook, Tavis without the R on Instagram and Facebook. He has Tavis Westbrook Designs, where he does renderings and blueprints and all sorts of things that can help you get your project off the ground and to the finish line. And what we will do is we will link the interviews that we've had in the last couple episodes. We had Eric Crutchfield last Tuesday, and then this coming up Tuesday, please tune in to our interview with Tavis's friend Walter. It's super, super cool, and you will not want to miss that. But until then, we wish you the best, and we'll talk to you soon.